and associated along the path of the various dust, you find land which has some fluid that helps in the maturation of the gametes as they go through their journey. In the male reproductive system, the gonads are the testes that are located outside of the body cavity in the scrotal sac, which are imaginations of the skin, just below the pelvic region. And from there, you have a series of ducts starting with the epididymis that's shown here, the smaller ducts. We'll talk about some of those in a bit. And it leads to another duct called the ductus deferens, or the vas deferens.
Membrane. Instead of just breaking through it, the serous membrane from the peritoneal cavity
wall of the testes. What helps in the center of the testes is a connective tissue strand that's called the gubernaculum. And the gubernaculum is related to the gubernaculum. Outside of that, in the inguinal canal and took part of the internal abdominal bleeding with it. See, the cremasteric muscle contracts in response to temperature. The testes lie outside the abdominal cavity because they're very, the stem cells, the spermatogonium, are very sensitive to temperature. And if you put the spermatogonia at body temperature, they'll begin to die off. Okay, so the testes lay outside of the body cavity to cool them down the developing sperm cells. So they maintain the temperature about a degree below body temperature. If the temperature starts rising too much, the testes does a number of things to help regulate the temperature inside. One of them is that the testes will go away from the body cavity. Okay? If it's very cold, the testes can be drawn up towards the abdominal cavity. And if it gets too cold, they could potentially go back up through the inguinal canal, which would be running into a problem. Okay, part of this mechanism is this cremasteric muscle. Okay, the cremaster muscle, when it contracts, it pulls the scrotum up towards the body wall. So it's going to help warm up the testes and the developing sperm cells. If you rub the inner thigh of a male, you can cause this reaction to occur. Okay, just a little cremasteric reflex, you can stimulate with the inner thigh, and it should cause the testes to extend somewhat. Okay? In a female, you do the same thing. You can get a dimpling of the labia majorum. Okay, because of the similarity between these structures. There's a cremasteric reflex even in the female, although it doesn't serve as much of a function. Okay. Outside of this cremaster muscle is a layer that's derived of, and this is connective tissue that's derived from the external abdominal lead. Okay. And then outside of that, this yellow layer is the skin covering the scrotum. So just as a review, there's two layers that directly surround the testes. The inner layer is the tunica albuginea, or the white layer is the glistening layer that's the visceral layer of the peritoneum, and the outer layer is called the tunica vaginalis, and there's a space in between the two of them. And within the testes, you'll find septa that divide the developing areas, the seminiferous tubules, into lobules. Okay, so these are septa made of connective tissue. In between them are these lobules of seminiferous tubules. Seminiferous tubules are where spermatozoa are produced. So if we take a little look at these seminiferous tubules between the septa, you can see different profiles, the cross sections. These are actually the tubes that are winding around, and there's only three of them, but there's several hundred lobules. So this is very tiny tubes that are continuous. Okay, these tubes are where the spermatozoa are developing. When the spermatozoa are released, which is called spermiation, the spermatozoa go into small tubules called straight tubes. They're straight tubules, and there's several of them coming off of the different lobules. And then at the top towards the top of the testes, they form a network of tubules that are called the Reedy testes. And the Reedy testes come out eventually to end in some ducts called the efferent ducts. Okay, so the spermatozoa produced down in the seven different tubules lead into straight tubules, and then they form a little network in the mediastinum of the testes, and then they straighten out again to form a efferent duct. As the spermatozoa are going through this very tiny region here, they're going through further maturation. There's secretions associated with these different tubules that help to prepare the spermatozoa for its long journey and its eventual fertilization of the egg. Okay. During this process, there's also an elimination of damaged spermatozoa. All the spermatozoa that are made are not going to be perfectly functional, so that these initial tubules are able to select out spermatozoa that may be damaged and may not be healthy enough to result in fertilization. Okay, from the efferent duct, the spermatozoa go into the epididymis, which is a storage area for sperm, and it's also an area that allows further maturation of the spermatozoa and elimination of damaged spermatozoa. The epididymis then leads into a single muscular duct that comes away from the testes that's called the ductus deferens. Okay, the ductus deferens is similar to in structure and derived from the same primordial tubule as the oviduct in the female. Okay, so during development, the male and female reproductive tract at first look totally identical. As time goes on, different portions are retained and other parts are lost. In the female, all these tubules between the analogous structures in the ovaries of the seminiferous tubules up to the ductus deferens are degenerated, so that they're lost during development. If you look at the area where the spermatozoa are formed, the seminiferous tubules, and we just take a cross-section of it here, if you look at one cross-section, there's an underlying basement membrane that would be located right about here. Okay. Over here, there may be another profile of the tubule. Some of them may be in longitudinal sections. In between the tubules, you'll find connective tissue and scattered cells that make up the interstitial tissue of the area in between the seminiferous tubules. In these interstitial areas, you'll find cells that are epithelial-like cells that are called interstitial cells or Leydig cells, or the interstitial cells of Leydig. The interstitial cells of Leydig are the ones that produce testosterone. And I'll tell you now, they have receptors for luteinizing hormone, one of those anterior pituitary hormones. When LH binds to the receptors on Leydig cells, it causes them to produce testosterone, okay, or other androgens that can then be released into the interstitial space and blood vessels that are located nearby. Okay, the seminiferous tubules contain a number of different cells. Okay, there's two major categories. One is a supporting cell called the Sertoli cell, and the other is the developing germ cells, okay, that are going to become the spermatozoa. toward the lumen. These are the cells that are more differentiated. They're the ones that are closer to being a spermatozoa if they aren't already. So development of the germ cells progresses from the basal layer towards the lumen. And as they mature, they get released into the lumen. This outer layer of cells right next to the basement membrane is a cell called the spermatogonium. Spermatogonium are the stem cells for all spermatozoa. Spermatogonium have the diploid complement of DNA. They're a somatic cell. Okay, so they're, if you took a spermatogonium and you injected it into the individual's skin, they would recognize it as being their own cell. Okay? If you took these cells that have differentiated towards spermatozoa, including the spermatozoa, if you took a sample of spermatozoa and injected it into the sperm donor's blood system, it would mount an immune response against it. So these cells are now expressing proteins that normally aren't expressed because they're haploid cells. As you know, there's some control over genes that are expressed. When you have a diploid cell, there's two chromosomes, and the matching gene of one will inhibit the expression of the other gene, okay, which might be some particular protein. So when these cells divide and there's no longer that dominant gene, the other gene will start being expressed, so that the immune system of the male can be sensitized to their own spermatozoa that is being made or the other developing cells. I'm going to come back to that in a second. There's a few processes that occur in terminology that you have to deal with. One is called spermatogenesis. And spermatogenesis is the process where the stem cells undergo meiosis to eventually produce the immature spermatozoa called spermatid. The second part of the process is called spermiogenesis, and that's taking the spermatid to maturation, where it becomes a fully mature, I'll put mature in quotes because it's not fully developed yet, spermatozoa. Okay, the other process that goes with this is called spermiation, and that's when the spermatozoa are released into the lumen of the seminiferous tubule. Turtle. after you go through the first division, which will result in two cells, you now have both of your maternal chromosomes, so this particular chromosome going to one cell, and the other from your paternal chromosome going to the other. So now you have cells that are not the same as the original cells, because they only have, in this case, your paternal chromosome, it could be your maternal, and so on, but they're not paired up anymore. Okay? So at this point, these cells can start making proteins that aren't normally seen. Because if the gene on your maternal chromosome for a protein was inhibited by the gene on the paternal, now it's going to be expressed. And it can be something that's foreign to the individual's body. So these cells can produce proteins that can mount an immune response. Okay? After this, these cells go through a regular mitotic division and just divide out these chromosomes equally to the new cell. So meiosis, you start with one cell and you end up with four. And there's two parts. One is the segregation of the chromosomes out to the first individual, then the second is just simple mitosis that divides them out. So you end up with two pairs of non-identical cells. The stem cell in male and female is called a gonium. Okay, the male is called a spermatogonium, and the female is called an oligonium. And we'll talk about that later. Okay, the cell that enters this first meiotic stage, and meiosis begins as soon as the chromosomes replicate, this is now called the primary spermatocyte. And the female is called the primary oocyte. Okay? The cells that come from this first meiotic division are called secondary. And this is a secondary spermatocyte in the male or a secondary oocyte in the female. The cell that's supporting all this is called over the top of it. And there'll be another system attached to itself over here that does the same thing. And where our two lab coats meet, they're held together. They're by a tight junction. I guess we have to sew them together for my case, but there's tight junctions in between it, so these projections here are actually covering the entire cell, and there's a continuous layer from all the supporting cells throughout the seven different tubules. Okay, this layer forms the blood-testis barrier, so that proteins that are made by the primary spermatocytes and the secondary spermatocytes and the spermatozoa can't get across the membrane. If they did, if they got into the interstitial space, there's blood vessels here, there's immune cells, and they can recognize those proteins and start an immune response and eventually start destroying these cells. Okay? In a mastectomy, this blood testes barrier continues all the way up through the back zephyr. If someone has a vasectomy and has it reversed, there is occasional times that it can't be reversed. And if this blood testes barrier has been broken through, the immune system has started an immune response against the spermatozoa. So even though you put the two back together, they can't produce normal sperm anymore because their immune system is going to wipe out all the developing spermatozoa. Okay, so this gives it another name. The substance back to the cells are often called Sertoli cells, or supporting cells. These cells respond to the pituitary hormone, FSH, or follicle-stimulating hormone. They have receptors on their membrane that respond to FSH. Instead of making steroid hormones, these cells make things that are important for the maturation of the sperm. Various types of glycoproteins, for example, that are needed for the nourishment of these developing germ cells. Proteins that bind to androgens are also made by Sertoli cells, and I'll go through a list of those with you. Okay? As I said earlier, the interstitial cells have LH receptors, and the LH released by the anterior pituitary stimulates these cells to make testosterone. Some of the testosterone, and this one shows it better, is the capillary right next to the interstitial cells. Most of the testosterone is going to go into the blood system and have effect at various target organs. Some of it is going to diffuse into the seminiferous tubules and going to end up in the lumen. The substantacular cells produce androgen binding protein that binds to testosterone in the lumen of the seminiferous tubule. Testosterone is important for the development of the spermatozoa. It has a half-life in blood or in fluid that's on the level of seconds. Okay, so the androgen binding protein protects testosterone from being degraded. Okay, yeah, and that's the reason it's important in the seminiferous tubule. In the last part of spermatogenesis or spermiogenesis is the maturation of the spermatid into the mature spermatozoa. If the spermatid begins as your typical rounded cell, it has a Golgi apparatus, it starts accumulating lysosomes and mitochondria, and as time goes on, these organelles become polarized. The Golgi apparatus goes to one end of the nucleus, and it starts producing a lot of lysosomes. And these lysosomes are called acrosomal granules. What they are hydrolytic enzymes that start accumulating in this area. A basal body goes to the other end of the cell and it starts producing a cilia. Okay, the mitochondria starts migrating toward where that cilia is located. The acrosome becomes very large. It becomes a very prominent feature. It's not just a little isolated lysosome. It's a big diffuse membrane. It's filled with these hydrolytic enzymes. Cilia becomes longer, now forming a flagella, and the mitochondria start wrapping around the cilia. At the same time, parts of the cytoplasm are being shed, so they're losing part of the cytoplasm, and the shed cytoplasm is engulfed by the sarcolemma. So the cells are going to get rid of all this debris that's being produced by these developing spermatozoa. The nucleus becomes very condensed. This is going to become a very tiny cell. The mitochondria number is increased quite a bit around the flagella. Acrosome becomes larger. More of the cytoplasm is shed. Until eventually you have the spermatozoa that has very little cytoplasm. The head portion of it is almost entirely the nuclear material that's very condensed and that's surrounded by this acrosome, which is contains hydrolytic enzymes. In the flagella, it's coming off from behind it, and in the middle of it is an area called the middle piece. It's got a couple of other names too. It has these mitochondria that wrap around the flagella. So the mitochondria are going to give the motor proteins for the flagella energy. So it's going to act as an energy source so that the flagella can help to propel the spermatozoa. The haploid DNA is ready for fusion with the egg cell. This acrosome is important in making it through the barrier that the egg creates around itself. Okay, every time that a spermatozoa comes across an egg, well, just about anything, it will release the enzyme. If it does it at a secondary oocyte, it will cause the breakdown of some of the protective barrier around the oocyte. Okay. The first spermatozoa that comes to the egg is not going to be the one that fertilizes it. It can release all this enzyme, and it's going to make a little dent in that barrier. Okay, eventually, one of the spermatozoa just comes around at the right time when the passageway is almost complete. It releases its acrosome and it can penetrate into the egg. Okay. And that's all due to these enzymes located in the acrosome breaking through the layer bit by bit. As soon as the oocyte entraps or help with spermatozoa, it seals its fate. It closes a barrier behind it so that no other spermatozoa can come in. Okay, it found her man, and it's going to keep her. Just wait till I get through the development of the oocyte. I'll make other sexes. I don't mean them as that, I just mean to be another some of these. And plus make it just leave a little more bearable. Some of the seminiferous tubules go through these series of small tubules and great tubules, the red testes, deeper in duct, and they end up in this big convoluted tubule that's around the testes. On one side, that's called the epididymis. Epididymis is important in a lot of the maturation of the sperm. When the spermatozoa is released from the seminiferous tubule, it pretty helpless. The flagella doesn't really work. They're pretty immobile when they leave the center for tubules. As they go through all these portions of the duct system, the epididymis will give it some of the fluid that it needs, such as probably a small amount of fructose and, as an energy source, and will help to activate the spermatozoa's ability to move. Okay, but even in the epididymis, it's not fully compactated, or it's not fully mature enough to fertilize an egg. So if you put the spermatozoa out of these tubules and try to fertilize an egg with it, it probably wouldn't be successful unless you give it factors to help. Okay. As I said, the epididymis, as well as some of these earlier tubes, are very important in getting rid of damaged spermatozoa. So there's a couple of different important functions associated with these tubules. Okay, from the epididymis, the spermatozoa is led through this very large muscular tube, the ductus deferens, and there's the lumen, very big layer of smooth muscle surrounding it. At the end of the ductus deferens, it expands out to form an ampulla, and it assumes an expanded region. And this ampulla narrows down to form the ejaculatory duct, and there's one on each side. The ejaculatory duct will empty on each side into the urethra. And then that level is the prostate, and that part of the urethra is called the prostatic urethra. Okay, so if we look at this, this is the ductus deferens crossing over the ureter. So we're looking at the posterior wall of the urinary bladder. It expands out form the ampulla, and then it narrows down to form the ejaculatory duct, but on each side, the little portion of it, and goes into the urethra. The prostatic urethra is located right here. This portion of the urethra that goes through the pelvic diaphragm, or actually the urogenital diaphragm, is called the membranous. Then below this membranous urethra is the part that goes to the penis. It's called the penile urethra. So there's three portions to it. If you look on each side of this, these ejaculatory ducts, you see these large structures that are called seminal vesicles. The seminal vesicles produce the majority of the seminal fluid that accompanies spermatozoa. And it empties into the ejaculatory ducts. Prostate gland also has secretions that it empties to help form the seminal fluid. And then there's a third set of glands located in the urogenital diaphragm